Hey, what's up everybody, and welcome back to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and this episode is Q&A number 20. As usual, if you have any questions that you want me to answer on the podcast, then you can send them to michael@scientifictriathlon.com or send them through the Facebook Messenger widget on my website, scientifictriathlon.com. So today, there's no sponsor, but I want to take just a quick minute to remind you that I'm currently launching my new intermediate Ironman training program. So there are a few more days to take advantage of the launch promo that I have, during which you can get 60% off the regular price of the plan. And as you know, I'm a big fan of individual coaching, and I think nothing compares even closely to getting an individual coach, but that's not something that is available to everybody for mainly cost reasons, I guess. So a good generic training plan can get you a real long way to achieving your triathlon goals when you can't afford that individual coach. And as far as training plans go, I've made my absolute best. I've put a lot of time and effort and also money into making sure that this plan is the best out there. That is always my goal. That will always be my goal with all the plans that I come out with. That they should always be better than my previous ones, and they should be better than anything else that's out there. So that's what I'm shooting for, and I hope that you'll agree as you go through this plan. It's 20 weeks long, so that's more or less 5 months to prepare for your Ironman, and on average, you will be training for 11 hours per week. One thing that I have gotten a lot of great feedback for already are the coaching videos that I have. Every week has a coaching video in the plan, so I talk you through that week and what are the most important things to consider in specific workouts and in the week as a whole. And of course, there's also an introduction video where I talk about how to use the plan as a whole and how to think about that and see the big picture. And some early adopters of the plan that got it last week or the last 10 days or so that it has been out by the time that you hear this, I've already had some great feedback for those videos. So really, thank you guys. I appreciate all of the praise for those coaching videos. So until Sunday, the 10th of February, so just a few more days as you hear this, you will be able to get 60% off the regular price, so you can get it for $30 on Training Peaks with the coupon code 60, that's 60. And the regular price after that will apply, and that will be $75. So get it by the 10th of February, or you will miss out on that. All right, so on to today's question, which comes from Sondre Halden from Norway. Hey, Sondre. It's nice to have a fellow Scandinavian writing in. Sondre writes, "Hi, Michael. I'm a follower of That Triathlon Show. Great work. I have a question about the old saying, if you're not monitoring, you can't be managing. In triathlon terms, if you're not testing the effects of your training, you can't make smart adjustments. I am a top-range age grouper in the 25 to 29 age group on the Ironman distance, and I'm having trouble accepting that normal tests for swim, the CSS test, 400 plus 200 meter, and FTP test on the bike, 20 minutes, and a 5K run as a run test. I feel that all of these tests are too heavily testing VO2 max and also anaerobic capacity and not the long-distance grinding capabilities. So question number one, how relevant are these normal tests, the standard tests for Ironman athletes?" All right, so I'll stop there and answer this part of the question first. I think that they're still very, very relevant because even though you are right in a way that you're saying that they're testing VO2 max quite a lot, it's not all VO2 max, it definitely has more of an endurance component. But VO2 max, even if it was a pure VO2 max test, VO2 max is a great predictor of endurance performance in all endurance events, including Ironman. If you have a good VO2 max on the swim, bike, and run, of course, you're going to have a different VO2 max in the different disciplines. Then you are likely going to be a very good Ironman athlete. Of course, you need to put in the work to get your endurance up there, but when you have that good VO2 max, that's really not that difficult. Of course, VO2 max is not everything. But regardless, if you're a professional or you want to be a top age grouper and place on the podium, for example, in your age group, there is definitely a certain level of VO2 max that is required, without which you cannot achieve those goals. So let's talk about the bike, for example, the 20-minute FTP test, because most people are familiar with that. In that test, in a 20-minute all-out time trial on the bike, roughly 90% of the energy for that sort of effort comes from aerobic metabolism. There is a slight individual variation, of course, but let's, for argument's sake, compare a more anaerobic athlete who gets 12% so from anaerobic energy. So that would be like only 88% aerobic. And we compare that to a diesel engine who gets only 8% of their energy for that 20-minute effort anaerobically. Let's say both of them hold 300 watts for that 20-minute test, and that means that aerobically the diesel engine produces 276 watts and the anaerobic athlete 264 watts. So there is a 12-watt difference there, which is, of course, significant. It likely means that the aerobic athlete, assuming they both do like good training, they prepare properly for the Ironman, they put in the distance, the hours on the bike. Assuming they do that and they come to the Ironman with this sort of fitness, maybe this is what they would have tested the week before the race, then, yeah, the person that both of them did the same test, but the person who is more aerobic is probably going to be faster if we assume that everything else is equal, like aerodynamics and so on, and nutrition. And there are plenty of things that go into this, of course. So testing is not by any means like the be-all end-all to how you will perform. But it does provide excellent benchmarking. But that 12 watts, it's percentage-wise, it's not that big really. And even then, like on a day-to-day basis, you will probably have a variation of 12 watts from how much you can perform on one day. Today is Thursday, if you listen to this as this comes out. Compared to Friday, it's probably going to be a 12-watt difference between those 2 days. So it is significant, but it's not massive. So it comes back to the fact that roughly 90% of the energy for an FTP test comes aerobically. And an Ironman event is an aerobic event. So it's 90% there in making it a very good test. It is already a very good test because it is so heavily weighted towards the aerobic side. Then on the run, just as a note, I personally prefer to use 20 minutes as well rather than 5K for this very reason. Like if you have a faster runner, somebody who is running 16, 17 minutes on the 5K, it can the emphasis of VO2 max becomes even higher, and perhaps you can use more anaerobic energy than the 10% that we talked about for the 20-minute test. We usually consider VO2 max intensity. That would be your 6 to 8 minute time trial pace. So even if you're somebody who can run 14, 15 minutes for a 5K, you're still not running at your VO2 max, really. But still, like I prefer to use the 20 minutes as a standardized time rather than a standardized distance. And actually talking about that, the time trial, the VO2 max time to exhaustion, I guess, which is 6 to 8 minutes usually. If we add 12 to 14 minutes to that to get to the 20-minute mark, then that it starts to become clear that even though you're working above your anaerobic threshold, it's not a sustainable pace, you're not that far above it. So it sort of evens out most of the differences that you would see in those shorter tests, like a pure 6-minute time trial, for example, for anaerobic versus aerobic athletes. So the one thing that it perhaps does not even out as much is, let's say you have one athlete that has a higher VO2 max than the other, but the second athlete has a greater running economy. Perhaps over the long distance, he can make that running economy count a bit more. Over the shorter distance, probably not as much. So he or she will test slower than the VO2 max strong athlete, so to say. But I still think the 20-minute tests, like, they do provide an excellent marker of aerobic fitness, and that's what we're after. VO2 max is super important for Ironman because that is the marker of your aerobic capacity. And it's your ceiling. It's in the name. It's your aerobic capacity. So it is important. And even though, of course, you're not working at VO2 max intensity at an Ironman, you're going to be working at a certain percentage of VO2 max. And the higher the VO2 max is, then the higher the intensity that you will be working at in absolute terms is going to be, even though percentage-wise, it's the same. So that's for the run. And for the swim, the CSS test is interesting. Just doing a 400-meter time trial, that would definitely suffer from the problem that it's so short that suddenly the differences between very anaerobic and very aerobic athletes, it becomes very significant. But this is the whole idea of the CSS test, is that you're also testing your 200-meter test, and you're looking at what the differential in the pace between those two tests are, the 400 and the 200-meter. And if you compare these two athletes, the anaerobic machine and the aerobic diesel, then the difference in pace drop-off from the 200 to the 400 will be probably a lot greater for the anaerobic athlete. And that's it's on the basis of that that you calculate the CSS pace. So that's a great leveler doing those two different tests. So even if the anaerobic athlete is going to perform significantly better than the aerobic athlete in both of those tests, since the pace drop-off is going also to be larger for that athlete compared to the aerobic athlete, you actually find that they might have a similar CSS pace. And this, of course, depends on what the actual times are, but theoretically, you could easily find this. And the CSS sort of is a marker of your threshold, if you will, on the swim, even though that's not exactly what it is, but we can use it as a good proxy for threshold test. So again, since you're doing that calculation, you're looking at the drop-off in pace. That actually is a great way to level the playing field between valuing anaerobic metabolism and aerobic metabolism, so that you actually what you're actually measuring, if you're measuring the CSS itself, then that definitely will show you what your aerobic capabilities on the swim are. Assume that you pace it well. And I also like to, this is a trick that you might want to apply yourself. I calculate what that drop-off is between the 400 and the 200-meter pace. And what I shoot for and what I want my athletes to shoot for is a drop-off that is 5% or less in pace. So let's say that you did the 200 in 120 pace, that's 80 seconds, so 120 per 100 meters. Then you would want the 400 pace to be, I need to bring up my calculator here. 80 times 1.05, 84. So you'd want to do the 400 in 124 pace or faster. Otherwise, if you do it slower, then your drop-off is going to be greater than 5%, so that means that it shows that you're leaning a bit too heavily on the anaerobic side, and that's something that you want to change with the training. So that answers the first question. They are highly relevant, and they're good tests. They're not perfect, but they're good. Your question number two here that Sander writes is, are there other testing protocols more suitable for Ironman athletes? So the first thing I want to say is that lab testing is really great. It's the gold standard for a reason. Because actually knowing your VO2 max and your physiological threshold, your anaerobic threshold, your FTP, that is the most relevant test for any distance, whether it's a sprint or Ironman. And in terms of field tests, if you have the mental fortitude and the pacing skills, then yeah, it might make sense to make those common tests, those standard tests, even longer. So, for example, do a 30-minute TT on the bike instead of a 20-minute and on the run as well, and do a 1,500-meter swim time trial. So those are some examples. Those are great tests, and they will definitely be even more aerobic and emphasize the aerobic endurance in the athlete rather than the anaerobic side. So perhaps they might be better tests for an Ironman athlete, but the difficulty with these tests is that since they are longer, 50% longer in the case of the time trials on the bike and run, and a lot longer in terms of the time and effort required for the swim especially, it does require that mental fortitude and pacing skills. It becomes perhaps a bit more difficult to work them into the training schedule and make sure that you can recover for them and be ready for them both mentally and physically. For the run, you could just do a 10K race. That would be a great benchmark for sure. But to sum up, I guess that, yeah, I mean, if you can make it work, like with your physical, physiological, and mental well-being, as well as work it into your schedule in a smart way, then it might make sense to go for those longer tests. Absolutely. But I'm actually going to make a big reveal right here, right now, and more information will follow on the podcast in just a couple of weeks. But my preferred method of testing athletes, and again, regardless of distance, and for now I'm only doing it on the bike, but that is to use a special critical power test that consists of a 15-second sprint, a 4-minute time trial, and a 20-minute time trial. And I then analyze the data, and I use a software called Inside, which is created by physiologist Sebastian Weber. He's a really, really great German exercise physiologist and a coach. He's worked with athletes like Peter Sagan and Tony Martin that I'm sure most of you are aware of. So with that, I can get the full metabolic profile of the athlete. And the greatest thing is that the accuracy of this testing, it's 2.2%, which is as good or better than the gold standard lab testing for various reasons. I'm very interested in potential error sources coming from an engineering background, and quite a lot of statistics is what I focused on as well, and measuring errors, that sort of thing. So I talked quite a lot with Sebastian when I got onboarded to using this program about how it can be so accurate. And without going into detail, it really is that accurate, which is quite incredible. But I'm sure Sebastian will talk more about that when I have him on the podcast very soon. But since this is a test that you can do anywhere in the world, you just need your power meter. But again, right now it's only for the bike. But I'll soon open that up as a service to any athlete, so not just my coached athletes. So stay tuned for that. But that is by far the best testing method in my opinion. Because what I then get is not just the accurate threshold and VO2 max, which again is that's definitely a disadvantage of these 20-minute tests, that the thresholds that you get, you don't get VO2 max. You get a threshold if you use the standard 95%, but that's usually not really accurate. What I've seen when I've been able to compare my athletes' field tests with lactate tests, for example, is that that percentage should usually be between 90 and 95, but let's say between 90 and 92 is more common, or 90 and 93%. So 95% overestimates the threshold most commonly. But in addition to getting the accurate threshold and VO2 max, so not overinflated versions of them, I also get the lactate building rate, VLA max. So that is like the anaerobic equivalent of VO2 max, if you will. So, and that's something that most people, they don't even know how this VLA max, the lactate building rate, is super important for endurance performance. And specifically for long distance athletes, for Ironman athletes, you want to have a low lactate building rate. And why is this important? Because your threshold, your FTP, whatever you want to call it, which I think we can all agree is massively important, it is determined to something like 98% by only two variables, and those are VO2 max and VLA max. So those two variables, the aerobic capacity and the anaerobic capacity, if you want to use that term, those two variables are the only ones that really impact your FTP. So to give you an example, let's say we have two athletes that are both 75 kilograms, both have an FTP of 250 watts. Here's the interesting thing. Rider A, he may have a VO2 max of 50, and rider B may have a VO2 max of 63. So that's a 26% difference in VO2 max. That's something that anybody listening to this would probably kill for, to get that sort of VO2 max improvement. But the reason that they have the same FTP is that rider A has a low VLA max, a VLA max of 0.3 millimoles per liters per second. And this is around the level that you need to be a professional Ironman athlete. But age groupers can achieve this level. Much like for most age groupers, it's impossible to achieve professional level VO2 max, because they're typically limited by genetics. And if not by genetics, then by the time they have available to put into training, which definitely is one big component of getting a high VO2 max. But VLA max, it's easier to get to that level for an age grouper. A rider B, the one that has a 63 VO2 max rather than 50, he, on the other hand, has a VLA max of 0.9, which is around the level of a sprinter-type cyclist. So same FTP, vastly different metabolisms. So now, if we can train rider A to get to a VO2 max of, let's say, 60, his or her FTP will go from 250 watts to 310 watts. So that's a 60-watt increase by increasing VO2 max by 10. That's, of course, a big increase in VO2 max. So that's quite difficult, but it might be possible, depending on how that athlete has trained in the past, what their history is, and what their genetic capabilities are. But the training that will take that athlete to a 310-watt FTP, is going to be totally different from the type of training that rider B has to do to get to a similar FTP. Because for rider B, what we want to do is to train them to decrease their lactate building rate. So let's say that we can reduce the lactate building rate from 0.9 to 0.5. And remember for reference that rider A was at 0.3. But even if we can just get to 0.5 for rider B, then we can increase their FTP to 300 watts without changing VO2 max whatsoever. So in my opinion, this is because this testing method, the critical power test with inside software that gives me the full metabolic fingerprint, including all of these metrics, the VO2 max, the threshold, and the VLA max, plus carb and fat combustion, which is, of course, as well, super important for any athlete, but especially for long-distance triathletes. For these reasons, this is by far the superior testing method to any other, because even in most lab tests, you don't get to know your lactate building rate. And when we know both your lactate building rate and your VO2 max, that's when we can really know what type of training it makes sense to focus on for that individual athlete. You could test VLA max in a lab fairly easily, even yourself with a friend if you have a lactate meter. But again, as I said, for some reason, most labs seem not to offer that service. I don't know why, perhaps because it's not fully understood how important this is to performance. But the way that you would do it is to simply warm up on the bike and measure your baseline lactate after that warm-up or at the end of that warm-up. Then you would do a 15-second all-out sprint. You would measure your lactate levels, for example, every other minute. So after 2 minutes after finishing the sprint, 4 minutes, 6 minutes, maybe 7 and 8 minutes, until you get to your lactate peak. So you reach your highest lactate number, and then the lactate starts to drop, because it will take a while for that lactate to get from the muscles into the blood flow so that you can actually measure what your peak lactate was. So you would take this peak lactate, and you would subtract your baseline lactate from that, and that would be how much lactate you built up. And you would divide this amount of lactate by 12 seconds. And why 12? That is because during the first 3 seconds or so of the sprint, you are using direct energy sources, creatine phosphase and ATP perhaps, rather than producing glycolytic energy with lactate. So that's why we take 12 seconds and not 15 seconds. So let's say that your baseline lactate was 1 millimole and your peak lactate was 10 millimoles. Then you would take 9 millimoles per liter and divide that by 12 seconds, and that would be your lactate building rate. So, that was that explained, I guess. I've just had to go back and look at the question. Other testing protocols more suitable for Ironman athletes? Now, having gotten used to getting data from my athletes with VO2 max and VLA max, I would not go back to any other way than this. But you can test VLA. You don't need to use a software to get VLA max. You can use it with a lactate test, like I just described. And what you can then do is you do a separate field test. You do a 4 or a 5 minute time trial on the bike, and that will give you your power at VO2 max. It won't give you your VO2 max, but you can get your power at VO2 max. And I'm sure there are ways, like you can probably find some calculators online to estimate your VO2 max based on that. So that shouldn't be too difficult to find. Question number 3. Lots of studies evaluate training effect in increased VO2 max and FTP. Typical Ironman training with long sessions and intervals at Ironman and half Ironman pace are usually not the best way of increasing these parameters. So by using an FTP test and having very little gain, one could think that training was ineffective. But I would argue that it's still very possible that the athlete could have improved their Ironman capabilities. Yeah, this is a great point, and it gives us an example of why it's so important to understand why you're doing what you're doing in training. So yes, you should be doing some race intensity before a race. Whether it's an Ironman, you should be doing Ironman intensity. If it's a half Ironman, you should be doing half Ironman intensity in the lead up to the race. The reason that you're doing this is it's a way to make sure that your exercise economy on the bike, on the run, and on the swim at those specific race intensities is topped up. We call this economization. But you shouldn't overdo it. I think it's a very common mistake to do too much race intensity for too long, And you are right. It's not the best way to achieve any of the things we want to achieve other than economization. So we're not really seeing the same increases in FTP or in VO2 max or decreases in VLA max that I just introduced to you. So I think that starting the race-specific intensity 8 weeks out from the race, for example, that's more than enough. And it depends a lot on how you race. If you're somebody that races quite a lot, you do a lot of half Ironmans every single year and you're used to that, then 8 weeks suddenly starts to seem too much to me. Then I would say that perhaps 4 weeks before the race, then you do another build and after that race, and then you take 4 weeks before the next race, and so on. You don't need to do too much of that race-specific intensity. And that is a common mistake that a lot of age groupers do. They train too much at race intensity. And in this case, in half and full Ironman, that's not really effective training. It's a different thing if you're training for sprint and Olympic distance races, because those are more useful, more beneficial intensities, because they are close to or above your threshold. So those are very useful intensities to be training at physiologically as well. But yeah, I mean, eight weeks, if you're not racing very many races each year, then that 8 weeks period is quite good, I guess, as a rule of thumb. But it is more than enough. You don't need to do more than that. So I do, in many cases, start much later with my athletes, depending on their race schedule. So my suggestion for what to do here is that as you enter the final part of your race preparation, so let's say that you do you do 5 weeks of race intensity and 1 to 2 weeks of taper before your race. During that period, you're no longer looking to increase FTP or VO2 max or reduce VLA max. Your physiology is where it is, except for your economy. That's what you're working on. And race-specific preparation like race fueling, aerodynamics, just getting comfortable training for a long time on the bike and on the run, open water swimming, those sorts of things. But you're not really looking to increase FTP, VO2 max, those sorts of things. You're done with that. The hay is in the barn. But until that point, when you start that race intensity phase, your goal should be to improve your fitness, either by increasing VO2 max or reducing VLA max. And any one of these can increase your FTP. Of course, this depends on where you are. Like if you're already at 0.3 VLA max, then it's clear that you need to work on increasing VO2 max rather than decreasing VLA max. But your training should reflect this goal of increasing your fitness at all other periods, except for this very last period before the race. Because that race-specific intensity, it has very diminishing returns when you do it for too long. So there's no point doing too much of it. It's good, but don't do it for too long. Okay, so final question here. How can muscular endurance in the Ironman context be tested? So this, again, is an interesting question. First of all, muscular endurance, or strength endurance, as it's also called, is a term that a lot of us, including myself, use, and quite a lot. It doesn't necessarily have a very clear definition, at least that I'm aware of. Somebody may correct me, but not really a specific definition that comes to mind for me, at least. But for the listeners that may not know what it is, when we refer to this, we often refer to workouts that are muscular endurance workouts. That's how I refer to it, at least. So on the bike, a great example would be doing intervals at low cadence. So you need to produce the power, that your target power, whatever that is, using a higher torque rather than a higher cadence. So that means that you're basically forcing your muscles to work more than your cardiovascular system. What a lot of people don't know is why we do this. What is the whole purpose of this? Well, the idea is that you can convert some of your super fast twitch fibers, the 2X fibers, to more moderately fast fibers that also have some mixed capabilities. So they are both fast twitch, but they have some slow twitch capabilities. So they are called the 2A fibers. They are the middle type of fibers. So we convert the Usain Bolt 2X fibers to the 2A fibers. And the 2A fibers that we have, we can make them more endurable. Is that a word? I think it is. Through that sort of training, through the strength endurance training. However, for this to happen, the power that we produce needs to be high enough that these muscle fibers are actually recruited. Because if the power is too low, like we're going... I know that some people say that you can do these low cadence efforts at like zone 2 or low zone 3. I disagree completely. because we're not recruiting these fibers at those intensities. We're only recruiting slow twitch fibers that we really have no benefit from training this way. So what we want to do is go at a high enough intensity that we're actually recruiting these fast twitch fibers, and that is typically, for comparison, around sweet spot intensity, maybe higher zone free tempo also. But sweet spot intensity is the sweet spot intensity, really, also in terms of strength and endurance. You can go higher, you can go towards threshold, but then of course you can do less total work, so it really depends on what you want to get out of it. But you should be at minimum at that high zone free but sweet spot intensity is like, that's the mark to shoot for, in my opinion. That's where the bulk of strength endurance training can fall. And that's something that, for example, this was not planned, but in my intermediate Ironman plan that I just talked about earlier, you'll see a lot of these workouts like sweet spot intensity or zone 4 intensity with these low cadence efforts. And that's all to doing this work with the muscle fibers, transforming the fast twitch fibers to mid twitch and slow twitch, or making them more endurable, so to say. And also this type of training, it reduces VLA max again. So it all comes back to that, which we already talked about. If you can reduce VLA max, your FTP is going up, all else being equal. So bingo, that's how we do that. So muscular endurance training, strength endurance training, it's a way to get to VLA max and train that, and specifically train it to become lower, which for endurance athletes I'm not talking about sprinters, but I'm talking about like time trial steady endurance athletes like Ironman, half Ironman. We want that lower VLA max. So to answer your question, how do we test muscular endurance? Well, since the goal of that muscular endurance training is to lower VLA max, you do it by testing your VLA max, which I described before. You can do it as a lactate test, the 15-second sprint test, or you can do it as part of that critical power test that I described, just using your power meter and the Inside software. So with that, I'll link to Inside, by the way, and I also link to a great YouTube video with a workshop that Sebastian from Inside did in Boulder in the summer of 2018, I think. That is great and goes into a lot of this physiology. I stole my example with the 250-watt FTP rider from that presentation because I didn't have the numbers. So that's from there, full credit. I'll link to all of that in the episode description. Just note that it's not available to athletes. You can't go and sign up for it. It's only available to coaches. So you have to go through a coach to do that testing. And there are some coaches that do it. I will personally open up my testing service for it within the next few weeks. So definitely feel free to email me or message me already if you are interested in doing this sort of testing and getting the results and the analysis, and importantly, the training prescription. Like, what does this mean for you? What will be your best type of training given your metabolic fingerprint? All right, so that's about it. Remember, as I mentioned before the show, the intermediate Ironman training plan, a few days left to get it at the now or never 60% discount. The coupon code is 6060, and that will give you the plan for $30 on Training Peaks rather than the regular price of 75, which will apply after the 10th of February. So I'll link to that in the show notes, or you can go through my website and just in the menu you have a tab called Training Plans, and you just click through to the intermediate Ironman plan, and that will take you where you need to go. Thank you, as always, for listening. Keep training smart and keep loving triathlon.